As our focus shifts to the 2026 recruiting class, Auburn is already after some big dogs.
In the world full of podcasts, he's the undisputed heavyweight champion of hot takes, an Auburn sports homer, master of the bug, and message board legend. Get your buttons buttoned and your hats flattened, because the Top Button Podcast is about to kick off, and you don't want to miss your courtside seat. Now, here's your host, Charlie Five.
Yes, sir, we're back. It's another episode of the Top Button Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Rush, a.k.a. Charlie Five, and we are ready to get dadgum after it. Happy Tuesday. A lot of recruiting talk today, and I'm fired up about it as Auburn starts to kind of shift gears and really put the pedal down on the 2026 class. Already have some big-time guys you're going in-home with. You're getting scheduled for visits. We're going to talk about two of those, and we're going to talk about multiple, I'm sure, over the next several weeks. But before we get started, I got to give a shout-out to thebarnauburn.com. If you're signed up for the Barn Auburn, you already know a lot of the stuff we're going to talk about, as you can get all our recruiting scoops, team scoops, everything that's related to Auburn. You can find it there at the barnauburn.com. Great conversation as well. There's a special running for 2025. You get $25 off of an annual membership for 2025. Sign up today for only $75. Locks you in for the full year. That'll get you all the way through this time next year, which is essentially all the recruiting season, all the winter portal, everything, the season in general, and then back around to right now. So check us out at thebarnauburn.com. Auburn's already after a bunch of big dogs, as you knew they would, and one in particular has got his very first in-home visit. Auburn was his very first in-home visit as soon as the evaluation period, contact period, whatever the heck you want to call it, where coaches can actually go on the road and visit high school kids. As soon as it opened, Auburn sent Kent Austin in-home with the number one overall quarterback in the country next year, Nashville native Jared Curtis from, I believe, the Nashville Academy, Nashville Christian Academy, something like that. Look, there, everything that you can like about a quarterback, Jared Curtis has it. He's got the size. He's 6'4", 225 plus. He's got the arm strength. He's got the mobility. He's got everything that you could ask for. He started every single year of high school. He started. Now, looking at some of the I wonder about some of the competition they're playing, but regardless, he's doing what you got to do, and he's turning heads of national analysts. He's turning heads of every program in the country. You got Ohio State coming very hard after him. You got Georgia, who wants him very badly. He's the real deal. He's the real deal. He's everything. If you could, you know, everything that we said we liked about Jackson Arnold or Walker White or even Deuce Knight, and when you talk about measurables and what they do and the style of their game, Jared Curtis has all that. He checks all those boxes. Last year, in his junior year of high school, he completed 70% of his passes. And at a high school level, you got to think you're not protected at a high level. You don't have high level wide receivers typically. So you have to be, not only do you have, you obviously have to be accurate when you throw it, they got to catch it for the completion percentage to be up there. So 70% in high school is very, very impressive. He's putting it on the money. And I watched some of his highlight films, and it's not like we're dinking and dunking. It's not like we're getting a bunch of we're not making a bunch of high percentage throws. We're slinging the ball down the field. So you complete 70% of your passes at a high school level, you are an you're very, very accurate. And obviously, what we've seen over the past couple of years, accuracy under pressure is something that Auburn has sorely needed. So accuracy, check. He threw 40 touchdowns to only 3 interceptions in his junior year. So you look at the touchdown to interception ratio, I don't even want to do that math. I don't know that I can do that math in my head without a calculator. But regardless, you're talking about decision-making. doesn't turn the ball over. That is something that Auburn sorely needs. Someone that can make a lot of times it's not even so much of the physical gifts as it is just make the right decision. Just run the play as it's designed. Execute the play as it's designed. Make the correct decision pre-snap. Make the correct decision post-snap. 40 touchdowns to 3 interceptions. That tells me that he's able to diagnose coverages. He's able to pick out make the correct read, deliver the throw, and manage the game and not turn the ball over. And I think that's obviously a premium that Auburn really, really needs badly in that quarterback room. Rushed for 600 plus yards, and 18 touchdowns. Mobility. I think Auburn's offensive line, as you saw last year's class and a few classes prior, you're starting to kind of build the foundation of a good offensive line room, you know, one that hopefully can be sustainable. Yes, you may still be a couple of years away from not having to go, dip into the portal for more than just one spot. But you're still building that foundation where you can have some foundational depth that you bring in, that you develop, that's a part of your culture. Yes, that part's getting better, but it's still not all the way there. It's still not at, you know, I would say maybe not quite at the, you know, the top of the top as far as just sheer talent in that room goes when you compare to like your Ohio States and those other type programs. Maybe not all the way there quite yet. So mobility is something that is vastly important. You got to be able to maneuver. You got to be able to move around. The mobility beyond the line of scrimmage isn't necessarily a necessity, but it's obviously a plus. And when you can run for, you know, 600 plus yards and 18 touchdowns, you can move. You have the tools to be able to manipulate the pocket and be very effective as a runner at the next level. I mean, that's 58 touchdowns in 13 games. 58 touchdowns in 13 games. You're talking basically 4.5 touchdowns a game. The kid can play. There's no doubt about it. He's as close to a no doubter as there could be. Everything you could dream of in a quarterback, if you could create a player, this would be very, very close to what you would come out with. Maybe, you know, mine would have, you know, a visor and wristbands. Everywhere you can put a wristband, you're guilty. You're guilty of that too when you do create a player. You're going to have the spat all the way up to the knee if you can. But that's just the appearance. When you talk about the traits, the size, the speed, all the attributes from the actual playing the position of quarterback, Jared Curtis has all of those. I watched some of his sophomore film. I didn't see a lot of his, I didn't see any of his junior film. Again, big arm, above average runner, very, very good runner. And then another big thing is he throws a lot off platform. So a lot of the things that I said I liked about Jackson Arnold, being able to throw at different angles, lends itself to being able to run the RPO effectively, because you're having to make quick decisions and you're making reads, and you may not necessarily be in perfect quarterback mechanic setup every single time you deliver a pass. Jared Curtis can deliver the ball at a lot of different angles on the run to the right, on the run to the left. He can, you know, when he's got pressure in his face, he can kind of take a step back and deliver it with accuracy and with some zip. So that's really good. The one thing that's a little bit concerning, and understand, I don't see anything but highlights. So maybe some of the better plays that he made were not RPO plays. Maybe we're just seeing the ones where they're dialing it up and he's throwing it deep. But I did not see a lot of RPO stuff in his offense. So now, granted, I didn't do just a huge deep dive. So it's not like I'm, you know, breaking down every single game. I do think RPO experience is important. Deuce Knight had a good bit of RPO experience in high school. Again, I don't think it's important. I don't think it's like a 100% necessity, because I think you're going to bring this guy in and you'll have time to teach him the system. But I think it helps clearly, if you have experience in the system, it makes the decision-making process a little bit easier, because you're just building off of stuff that you already know. So do I think this kid is, do I think that's a 100% reason to avoid him? Absolutely not. Do I think it could be, take him a little bit longer than maybe someone that has experience to be able to master that craft? It could be. But I think his physical tools and everything, all the clay that you have there, he makes sense. You're going to have to battle, though. You're going to have to battle all of the traditional big guys that have had a lot of success with quarterbacks. You're going to have to battle. So we'll see what happens there. I want to talk about quarterback recruiting in general for a second. And I talked about this on Zach's show today. You'll hear us talk, kind of graze across it a little bit. My philosophy here is changing, and I think that's fair considering that the game is changing. The recruiting game is changing. The roster management game is changing. And I don't want to say I'm all the way – I'm not saying I've jumped directly into the pool to adjust to the cold water. I got maybe 2 feet in right now, just testing it out, and I think I'm getting close to sort of maybe changing my philosophy as far as what you need and how you manage a quarterback room. What do I mean by that? Okay. A good quarterback, a really good quarterback to me, maybe not even, you don't even have necessarily have to be a really good quarterback. Quarterbacks in general that feel like they can play at this level, at the collegiate level, are not going to wait longer than 2 years. I think 2 years is max. And I think you have to really sell them on the front end to keep them from 2 years. They have to be bought in to the 2-year plan. Okay, so you're not. I know that it's very rare. There are some, so don't give me. I understand that there's some examples, but there's not a ton of examples of true freshman quarterbacks coming in and starting day one. And I don't know that it's ideal, because if you really think about it, if that true freshman wins the job, your quarterback room is completely jacked. Everyone's going to leave. And then as a sophomore, how are you going to fill out the depth chart? How are you going to fill out the room if you have a starting sophomore quarterback? It's going to be tough. You may be able to get a really good freshman in, but who else is going to come in and compete with a guy that's got 2 years minimum 2 years minimum. He could. I'm sorry. Let me. 1 year minimum, 2 years maximum of play. And now with the 5 years of eligibility, he could have 3 years to play. So I don't even know that that's 100% ideal. So with that in mind, it makes sense now when you really look at Hank. Hank was going into his third year. And there was no real path to playing time. I mean, he was going into his third year, and Jackson was too. Walker White, he was going into his second year, and you could kind of tell by a lot of the things he said, in his mind, it was a 2-year plan. And I think in the original probably plan for him, it was 2 years until, the market did what it did. And it didn't really present that 1-year guy that could come in and just be that rock star for 1 year. It didn't really present itself. So Walker made I think it was a good decision from that standpoint. I don't like all the development garbage and all the stuff ancillary around that. It's very simple. He wanted to play after his second year. And he didn't see that pathway at Auburn. And that's it. That's all the story. That's the whole rest of the story. And it's totally understandable. Everything else that was said, throw it in the garbage. It was there was a 2-year plan, and now that plan was up in the air. So I'm going to go somewhere where I feel like that 2-year plan could still be part of the plan. And at Baylor, they have a 1-year guy, and then he should be able to compete and win the job in his second year. So With all that being said, okay, 2 years seems to be the maximum of what these guys are willing to wait. I wonder sometimes the resources and the effort that you put in to the quarterback recruiting, if it's worth it in the end. Now, Jared Curtis, it would be so awesome in a pie in the sky fantasy world if you could just have a five-star quarterback every single year and you just compete and let the chips fall where they may. That would be – obviously, that's the most I guess, ideal scenario. It's not reality, okay? It's just not. These guys are smarter. These guys are – it's less about – to me, it's honestly more about their pathway to the field. So Auburn spent their very first visit with Ken Austin to go in-home with him. The very first day that you could get an in-home, you were Jared Curtis's first visit. So let's walk this out, okay? Jackson Arnold has 2 years. So that's perfect for Deuce because that's a two-year plan. And, you know, in theory, Jackson could go off this year and he maybe could be a one-year guy and then Deuce steps in. So that's obviously on the table, but let's just for the purpose of this exercise, let's just say Jackson Arnold has 2 years. Okay. So Jackson Arnold has 2 years. Deuce is starting his junior year. Okay. That would put Jared Curtis as a sophomore. Okay. So that means Jared Curtis is now 3 years from the field if he can't beat out Deuce Knight. You're not going to have one of those guys. Like, one of those guys is not going to be there for the long haul. One of those guys is not going to be the quarterback at Auburn at some point in time in their career. You've already got Deuce here. If you bring in Jared Curtis, one of those guys will not finish their career at Auburn based off of just what you've seen is all across the country in managing a roster. So my question is, and I don't know the answer to this, is it worth it? Is it worth it to put all your time and effort into and have this guy as number one on your board? I think he is deserving of number one on everybody's board. But your situation and your depth chart matters now. So do you put all your resources into this guy? And then when you could possibly have someone that you could get that's a very talented quarterback that could pop. He's got the tools to pop, but maybe you could secure him right away and then build around him. Quarterbacks are it doesn't matter if the 2026 class doesn't think – it doesn't matter if the 2026 class doesn't think necessarily like we think and sees it like what I'm talking about right now, that one of those quarterbacks is not going to be – the starter in Auburn at some point in time. And they're one of those quarterbacks is not going to be the starting quarterback at Auburn ever. It's basically impossible for both of them to now with the way things are. So they just want to, the 2026 class just wants to have a quarterback in their class so they can kind of build around and create those relationships. So I don't think anybody wants to go through what we went through last year at quarterback, even though you ended up with Deuce Knight and it was a blessing. Could have been a disaster. Could have been a disaster. And the way the season played out, it's even a huge, bigger blessing that you ended up with Deuce Knight because you had so many issues, so many missteps or so many lost battles that led up to that, that it drug you into the season and probably honestly lost you a couple of guys. Probably lost you a couple of guys. So do you take that risk with the big guy or do you try to secure somebody that you feel like you could get? And you know, I'm throwing out a name. I really like Landon Duckworth. I talked about it on Zach's show, the quarterback from Jackson. In-state guy, top 10 in-state, a lot of talent, just won the state championship, surrounded by a bunch of good kids on his team, would make a big impact in the state of Alabama. I'm still trying to hone in my philosophy there. So as this game develops, as recruiting develops, we'll see how that goes. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Am I just way off base here? But I worry about the money's not endless. resources are not endless. You have to dedicate your resources reap the most maximum benefit. And I'm wondering if trying to stack top quarterback after top quarterback makes a lot of sense. Again, could be wrong. Feel like if you just miss on a guy, you just go to the portal and you can find somebody, and it's kind of the same thing. And you can be a little bit more specific about filling the correct need on the correct spot of the depth chart through the portal. So we'll see. We'll see what happens there. I went a little bit long, but I do want to talk about this last guy who's scheduled for a visit, and he is the number two overall prospect in the whole country, and that's Emmanuel Iheanacho. Okay. Absolute monster offensive tackle, the position that's evaded Auburn as far as getting a blockbuster offensive tackle from the high school level. He's scheduled to visit for Auburn's Monster Junior Day for the home game against Tennessee, January 25th, which is going to be a blockbuster recruiting event, like Big Cat Weekend-esque. So definitely be on the lookout for that. He's a no-doubter. There's very few of these guys each year, maybe only two, three maximum each year, where they're guys that are going to be a starting Power Five offensive tackle at a premier program. There's only a couple of them every year. He's one of them. There's no doubt about it. I mean, he dominates every camp that he goes to. He's 6'6", 340 pounds right now. Every college in the country is going to battle over this kid, and Auburn gets him on campus. So that's obviously a huge plus, and gets him on campus early in the cycle. Offensive tackles, you have to take time. It's not like you have to have a multiple year relationship with a kid. And this is really the first chance Auburn's had to have a kid that they've had multiple years to build that relationship with. They've been on him since they first got here. I mean, he's been known, this kid's been a freak since he was a freshman in high school. And I think Auburn actually does have a chance here. I think Auburn does have a chance here. And one thing, the relationship piece is part of it, but the need for a left tackle next year, because you assume that Xavier Chaplin, this is going to be it for him, you're going to have a need for a left tackle. This kid would be like going and getting somebody in the portal. Going and getting one of your top tackles in the portal, that would be like this kid. You would bring him in, and you would expect him to start right away. I don't think you can go get these kids and expect these type kids to sit multiple years. Zalance Hurd, he signed with LSU. He was one of the top tackles in the country. Don't think he got to play a lot his first year. Goes to Tennessee, and now he's an SEC starter, and he's probably got one more year, and he's going to be in the NFL. Those guys don't wait. You bring that when you're a five-star plus, you're one of those two or three top tackles, you're coming in, you're ready to play. You look at David Sanders Jr., he was already taking first team reps in bowl practices. He didn't play, obviously, but he was getting first team reps at bowl practice. They're expecting him to play right away. Michael Fasusi, the second tackle of this year's class that went to Oklahoma, he's going to play right away. Like, those guys come in and play, and it's just like going and getting an Xavier Chaplin. These guys, they're just on a different level. So Auburn is in a really good spot relationship-wise. They're in a really good spot depth chart-wise, and they're in a really good spot NIL-wise, because you can spend the money you can spend that type of money if they're going to come in and play right away. It's really hard to stack that up and them not be playing. There's a huge drop off after him. This is not a very good offensive tackle class outside of him. Basically, there's two elite tackles, and then there's just a bunch of like just good players, average players. So this kid's from around here. So I think he's from Georgia. So that definitely helps. That definitely helps that Auburn in that situation. So early on in this class, you are bringing in, or you're visiting, the big guns. You're visiting the guys that you have to visit to compete at the net at this at the highest level. He's from Maryland. I apologize. Georgetown Preparatory Academy in Maryland. I don't know why I thought he was from Georgia. I may be getting him confused with another commit. But early on, as we shift our focus to the 2026 class, you see Auburn going big after the big dogs, and we'll see how that pays off. This visit list on January 25th is growing, and it's going to be spectacular. So, guys, I really appreciate it. If you want to get a little bit more information on where Auburn stands on with these guys and a little bit more behind-the-scenes type coverage, you definitely need to check out thebarnauburn.com. Again, don't take it. Take advantage of that $25 off for 2025 and go ahead and get locked in. You can catch me here every day, but you can catch me there all day. So questions, concerns, I'm there. I'm having fun mixing it up. So definitely join in and have some fun, get in the mix. So guys, thanks for listening. We'll be back again tomorrow. It's another episode of the Top Button Podcast. Stay buttoned.
Thanks for listening and drive home safely.